But it's the idea of thinking about thinking as a skill and a thing that you can develop, and not as automatic and rote, and the way you think is the way you think, and that's all there is to it. And he talks about thinking as the baseline of that's where your thoughts come from, and then from your thoughts, that's where your actions come from, and then that's where you get the results from the actions that you take. But it all leads back to your thinking and how you think about data and how you incorporate data into your thought process and things like that. And he talked about like practicing it.
Lack of clarity, accountability, and authority can impact your business in so many ways, and the way you work might help you realize the strategy or get in the way of it. Do you even know what the strategy really is and how to get there? All this confusion can be traced back to a lack of managerial leadership, or in other words, a deficit in the art of managing managers. In The Managerial Leadership Journey, author and retired Brigadier General Julian Chapman addresses the root causes of the pain we feel in organizations. His pragmatic approach pulls no punches and shows you the ongoing path to a workplace where employees at all levels have clarity of role, purpose, accountabilities, and authorities. It introduces the power of the enlightened leader and the engaged manager, who confidently and continuously build their teams with an approach of authenticity, transformation, and servitude. So, chart your course and explore the system. The Managerial Leadership Journey shows you that a great place to work is not just possible, it's in your hands. That passage was adapted from the book cover of Julian Chapman's book, The Managerial Leadership Journey, which is the subject of today's review and riff. And with that, welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where Rachel and I take a deep dive into the ideas and practices that will help you become a more effective and respected organizational leader. I am Stuart, and as a retired Army Senior Non-Commissioned Officer, a former hospital executive, and a management instructor, I have been leading and managing for almost 30 years and teaching it for over 15. Rachel is an Army officer and a healthcare practitioner. And while she is relatively new to the gig, she is one of the most talented young leaders I have come across. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you on the other side. Hey, you. Before we get back to the show, just a quick reminder. If you're enjoying it, give us that 5-star review and share it with at least one other person who you think will also enjoy it. That's it. Back to the show. Hello again, everyone. I'm Stuart.
And I'm Rachel.
And thank you for tuning into our show. Just a quick note before we dive into the R&R. We conducted an interview with Julian Chapman, the author of this book, which will be released this Thursday. So there will be certain items in the book that we covered in that interview that we will not cover too deeply here, or at all, actually. Because we covered some real good stuff with Julian and were able to get even deeper insight on some of the items covered in the book, please be sure to check out that episode this Thursday. With that, let's get that R&R started. Unless you have something to add before we get going.
I'm ready,
Rachel.
To go. Let's
okay.
get going.
So really, the first thing I'm going to do is sort of our review and riff is really sort of summarize what this book is about. The primary focus in the book is on what Julian refers to as managerial leaders, or in other words, those managers slash leaders who oversee more junior managers. That is the manager of managers. And Julian argues in his book that it is in this managerial leadership role a lot of the overall organizational successes and failures lie. And his main argument, sort of reduced down to its most specific form, is that being a managerial leader is much more about knowing how to effectively lead people than it is about knowing a lot about the technical components. Something we have repeatedly stated on this podcast, right, Rachel?
For sure.
He even goes as far to say, and I quote, "If you don't value people, get out of the managerial leadership kitchen, because managerial leadership is all about people," end quote. With this as his guiding message, Julian goes on to cover such topics as identifying and removing common organizational pains, strategy, what it actually is and how to link it to the work being done, creating appropriately sized sandboxes for staff, accountability and how accountability differs from responsibility, a very good one, by the way, the enlightened leader, the servant leader, and the engaged manager, and many more items in the book. Mm-hmm. Rachel, now that I've done a little summary, I know you had a couple points you wanted to hit on the book. And if we got time, I'll add my couple things mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about. Because remember, folks, we're leaving a lot of the big ones out because yeah. we're going to have enough in here that you'll find this episode interesting, yeah. but we want to leave some of them because we got it straight from Julian in the yeah. interview. We think we cover those very well with him. So there's going to be some stuff left out of here. So again, one more time, make sure you check out that episode yeah. Thirsty. These are good companion episodes.
Yeah. Cause I think one of the bulk of the book that I think both of us got out of it was, well, I don't know if it's the bulk of the book, but the biggest thing we got out of the book was the difference between accountability and responsibility, which we talked about like at length with Julian. So definitely check that out the episode for that conversation, because it was really, I think, the most unique part of this book from my perspective.
100% agree. Yeah. 100% agree.
And there was some other good stuff we talked about there, but I think that for one extra plug, that was something I definitely would have talked about if we hadn't already talked about it.
Yeah, because he does such a good job yeah. at differentiating.
Because it's so nuanced.
But. Yes. And he does it, not that I didn't sort of kind of think that yeah. way a little bit, but the way he did it made it so aha in yeah. my head that nowhere else have I seen it mm-hmm. that clear and that more like, oh yeah, you know, mm-hmm. that makes sense. So
yeah. So but one of the sections that I really enjoyed in the book was actually towards the end. So like a lot of leadership books, he has more and more leadership books that I think are being put out in the current day and age have a section about, you know, self-management or, you know, how to lead yourself kind of thing. And we've talked in the past about how some books more and more are putting that chapter at the beginning. His is more towards the end. But he has a section kind of about, what is the title of the chapter? Skills of Managerial Leadership, where he talks about individual skills that the manager of managers should have. And one of the things I really liked, he had a couple of pages talking about thinking. And this is something that is not like brand new to me. I've thought about this in the past and read other books about this. It's essentially like somewhat philosophical, but it's the idea of thinking about thinking as a skill and a thing that you can develop and not as automatic and rote and the way you think is the way you think and that's all there is to it. And he talks about thinking as the baseline of that's where your thoughts come from. And then from your thoughts, that's where your actions come from. And then that's where you get the results from the actions that you take. But it all leads back to your thinking and how you think about data and how you incorporate data into your thought process and things like that. And he talked about like practicing it being thinking. And so, I really liked that piece just because I do think that I think sometimes that gets, I conflate it with the concepts around like self-awareness. And I do think self-awareness, there is a difference between how do I think and how are my thoughts created. And
I do think it's difficult to do one without the other.
I agree.
I think almost impossible. I agree. Argue. I'm not a philosophy major myself, but yeah. I would say someone that tries to do both, I think it would be difficult. You're just going to stumble
yeah.
on it,
yeah.
even
yeah.
if you don't mean to.
100%. 100%. But I do, like, as there is a difference between accountability and responsibility that Julian kind of talked to us about, I think there's a difference
yeah,
between
I do agree
self-awareness and thinking about thinking and thinking about new ways to think. And so I really liked that section. And he had, that chapter has a good pit on, you know, self-care. And, like, he goes into conversations around mental illness and things like that, which I think is really important and not stuff even in your, you know, the platitudes in some leadership books, which are good about you need to take time for yourself and work-life balance. Some of them don't even go as far to talk about like you need to take care of mental illnesses because those are important yeah. and you need to be talking about that.
You are seeing that more, but you're right.
Exactly.
That is not something you would have seen 10, yeah. 15 years ago. I yeah. tell you that.
And even some, like I said, even some of the more recent ones don't take that extra step to go, at least not as detailed. He had like a couple of paragraphs about it. So yeah, I thought those pieces were really good. I do think he has a couple of good graphs around like organizational structure. I know we've talked about Brad Dude's book a bit. And he had some really great charts about organizational structures, but I really liked Julian's too, because he had multiples about like whether it be like a 7-layered organization or a 6-layered organization. I think he called them layers.
Yes.
Layered organizations. And I think that was really helpful because he really kind of broke out like what each layer does, whether it's strategy, you know, the more operational or actually boots on the ground type work. So I liked that piece as well. Another great, you know, when we've been having a lot of books like this recently, but not all management leadership books are like this. He also has really good questions at the end of each chapter, and places for you to write in the book, to sort of reflect on some of the concepts in the chapter. I think maybe it's just, maybe we just had a string of them recently that are like this, but I really enjoy when books do that. Even if I'm not going to write in the book, I just like to read through those and think about, like, to me, it's a sign of what does the author want me to, what do they think I'm thinking about in this chapter? So
I do want to skip back a few steps on something you hit. Mm-hmm. I thought you did a great job touching it, was the thinking about thinking. Yeah. And then also sort of how it relates to self-awareness, that they're not the same animal, but they're very closely related, and it'd be hard to come across one and not at least accidentally trip over the other, right? Totally agree with all of that. I have talked about, and I know it's been mentioned at least one of our episodes, about how important it is to incorporate thinking about thinking. And I would even go as far to say, it's semantic, so I don't really care. I would say it is a form of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Because when we talk self-awareness, that's this whole big-ass thing, right?
Yeah.
When you're becoming self-aware, you're looking at how do I feel?
Yeah.
How do I... what made me who I am? Why do I react this way? And then a very natural question along with that would be, why do I think the way I think? Why do I process stuff the way I process it? And I've told that to junior managers many times. Why it's so important is because you don't arrive to conclusions out of a vacuum. Every conclusion you come to, there is your own unique DNA of A, B, C, D, E that gets you to that conclusion. Now, it can vary, and depending on the situation, it could be pulling off one aspect of you. In another situation, it could be pulling off a different aspect of you. But your answer, even the most objective thinking processes, when you're thinking about a very objective problem, there is at least, at the very minimum, a hint of subjectivity that's going to get me to where I'm getting that wouldn't be in play with Rachel. Does that make sense? And I know I'm sort of going on about this, but what I'm really getting at is, if you don't understand, if you don't really stop and go, why do I process information that way? And why do I come to the conclusions that way? You're never really going to be truly self-aware, because thinking and arriving at conclusions is not only what we do as managers and leaders. Hopefully we're doing it at a higher level, but we do that every day as a human being. So I think a lot of people skip past that process because they're like, that's such a...
It's very meta.
Yeah, it's very meta, right? Yeah. Very ambiguous term.
And it's very like... meditative, sort of like, you know, you're thinking of your thoughts as things that are happening to you, as opposed to you, you are. Like, it gets very philosophical.
Yeah,
very
you start to feel like you're going on an acid trip,
exactly,
right? Like,
exactly.
What are we going to say?
It's like, oh, am I becoming a philosophy major? What's happening here?
Yeah. Let's turn on some Pink Floyd and get stoned.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
But it's not as crazy as it thinks. And I think if you're going to be in a position of leadership, you do need to make those attempts, and it'll be clumsy at first, because you're going to, again, it is very ambiguous. Like, what does that even mean? What, how do I know why I'm thinking what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
It's just like anything else. It'll be clumsy at first, but the more you do it, more you reassess, like, why did I arrive at that conclusion? Or why did I immediately go to this route of thinking as opposed to this route of thinking? And what I have found to be real effective at it at first is, if Rachel and I were both involved in a decision and we had to think about it, right? And Rachel arrived at a different conclusion, even if it's mildly different conclusion than I did, then I can go, okay, what about me, my experiences, who I am, could have influenced, because I respect Rachel. We agree on a lot of things. We see the world in very similar hues. But we obviously have our differences mm-hmm. too, in a different background. The way I could do is go, okay, what are the possibilities that would make me arrive at this mm-hmm. differently than Rachel would have arrived at it? And then if you have that kind of relationship, which Rachel and I do, I could go, okay, Rachel, this is sort of how I got here. Why did you get yeah. over here? And Rachel would go, oh, okay, I see why you got, this is why I got here.
Mm-hmm. But, and I just like, and I can't remember if I've told the story on the podcast before, but in my...
If it's at Wendy's, you probably did.
It was, this is not at Wendy's. This is, I haven't even begun to tap the surface of Wendy's stories. Don't you worry. I'm sure more of those will come out. No, this was actually...
I like your Wendy's yeah, stories.
This was actually during my my dietetic internship. I had a preceptor who... So the way I tend to learn, and this is learning is thinking sort of in my opinion, but like I was, you know, I was learning how to take care of like, from a nutritional perspective, how to take care of patients in the ICU. And my preceptor was... Instead of me just, you know, I would present an answer, and normally what I would do is I would talk through like, so here's the information that I gathered and here's how I synthesized that information to come up with what I think we should do. What am I missing? Where did I think differently than you, person who's been doing this for 20, 25 years? Because that was always my thought process. If I just give you, here's what I think I should do. And then you give me, no, that's wrong. You should do this instead. I cannot memorize it is impossible to memorize every scenario that I'm going to come across with patients in a hospital. There's a million, billions and billions and billions of
and
different scenarios.
And that's not real thinking. Exactly. And that's not being a real expert in
exactly.
your job.
Exactly. And so what I needed to learn was, how do I synthesize this information? How do I think about these problems? What thoughts should I use to prioritize which conditions and which, you know, catastrophes first to put into my little, you know, equation just to come up with the best approach moving forward? So I think that's something that I've kind of, well, at least by the time I'd gotten to my internship, had really learned was the best way for me to learn and think about things. So it can be, but it is, you've got to have somebody who, A, you've got to have somebody who's doing that themselves. Like, you can't ask somebody who isn't thinking about how they're thinking about things. How yes. are you thinking about things?
Well, they're going to look like, at you like crazy.
I don't know. I just know it. And it's like, well, that's not, no, you don't just know it. But anyway, so I do think that is I agree with you. I do think it's part of self-awareness, but I think there's something, maybe I'm just reaching, but I feel like there's something about where the thinking about thinking of self-awareness, but then taking it further to think about how do I change the way I think to produce different results for myself, which is inherently the point of being self-aware.
Yeah, that's what I'll say.
But I think being that explicit about it, because I think a lot of people don't draw that line. They draw it from self-awareness. But as we said before, self-awareness is much bigger than just how do I think. Yeah, it's also how do I react?
Yeah. See it more as a component of self-awareness. Yeah. I wouldn't argue with someone and say, well, they're part of the main group, but they're two subgroups. I'm cool with all that.
Yeah.
Now we're getting semantic. I would say I see it as just another component of the larger
yeah.
beast that is self-awareness. Because mm-hmm. If you're going to think about how you think and try to understand why you yeah. arrive at the conclusions you do, and you are doing it effectively, you're going to become more self-aware.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
just
yeah.
can't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if you arrive at good conclusions of, oh, this is why I get over here mm-hmm. and Rachel gets over there with her conclusion, I'm going to be aware of something about myself mm-hmm. that I wasn't aware of before, or maybe I was aware of that part, but I didn't understand how it impacted mm-hmm. the way I think mm-hmm. about certain things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Hello, it's Stuart here. Before we get back to the show, I have a question for you. Have you been wanting to increase your leadership and management knowledge, but do not trust the recommendations you get through a random Google search? Well, check out the Management Works website at managementworksmedia.com. There you will find more than 100 suggested books and over 250 free online training courses that cover a wide range of leadership, management, and administration topics written by a range of industry leaders and experts. So after you finish this episode, find the link to Management Works in the description section and get that knowledge that is only a few clicks away. Now back to the show. The only one I really want to hit, and there's a second one if we have time, and if we don't, that's fine. the really one I want to hit, and he doesn't spend a lot of time on it, but he says it so directly in his book, is he's brought up something that we've talked about way, way, way back when we were talking about performance appraisals, is that he acknowledges that performance appraisals, all performance appraisal systems, some more than others, inherently have flaws in them, mm-hmm. right? He gets it. But he also clearly states that so often people take those flaws and try to use them as crutches mm-hmm. when a lot of the real problems are managers aren't approaching performance appraisal systems the way they should be approached.
Yeah.
And basically what he's saying and what we have said before is if you're approaching performance appraisal systems as a once or maybe twice a year thing, you know, midterm and end of the rating cycle, and then that's when you're dumping everything on the employee, or it's all you talking to the employee and you're really getting no feedback from them, or you're pushing in front of paper in them and say, do you agree with this assessment? If you do, sign here. Mm-hmm. Cool. I want to let you get back to your work. I don't uh-huh. want to take up more of your time than I have to, like you're doing them a favor with uh-huh. it. If you're doing it that way, even in a flawed performance appraisal system, unless it's just totally screwed up or just totally the system you're using doesn't align well mm-hmm. with the organization type you have, because that could be part of it too. But unless that is the case, you can, in a performance appraisal system, in most organizational types, you can conduct a good quality performance appraisal yeah. if you approach it the right way.
Yeah, you can get like the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. And again, I think that's what a lot of gets missed because, again, the requirement in a lot of places is do it at least twice a year, or do it
every quarter.
Yeah, whatever. Every quarter. And then what happens?
You do it every quarter.
You do it twice a year.
Yeah.
And I get that. I've been guilty of it myself when times are tight and tough.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, if you're really approaching performance appraisal of how it really should be and how the only way it's going to be effective is continuous daily interaction mm-hmm. and feedback and conversation with the employee, it can be effective.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of words to say something that I think we all sort of get, but I do get a little tired. I actually just had a conversation with someone I really like a lot the other day, another manager. He was really dumping on the system that they used. Mm-hmm. And I'm familiar with the system. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It has flaws. But, you know, and he has junior managers that he's over. And mm-hmm. I said, but I know your junior managers. They also don't approach it in the right way. They're mm-hmm. not doing appraisals like they should. They're also overinflating because they don't want conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other things. The system is far from perfect and is very flawed. But I'm just saying, don't blame everything mm-hmm. on the system. It's also how it's being approached,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Nope, I agree.
And I think we do have time to add okay. my one last one in before we sign out of here, is I'll save a lot of lead up to it. He does, in part of his book, and I think one of the better parts of his book, he talks about the tenets of servant leadership,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And those are primarily seek and accept responsibility, ensure understanding of intent, be the impediment remover, encourage thinking and input, and understand your people. Now, I really like all of these, and I especially like be the impediment remover. Mm-hmm. But we've talked mm-hmm. about that in a previous episode. I think that was when we were talking about Brad Duth's book, mm-hmm. which, by the way, we said his name and we said book several times. I want to say, for those of you who haven't listened to that episode, it is Quick. I Need to Be a Leader in 30 Days.
Uh-huh.
With an explanation point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's Brad Duth's book that we've been referencing. If you haven't listened to that, go check that out, right? Anyway, back, I did talk about, to me, one of the primary things, purposes of being a leader is to remove the impediments,
yeah.
right? So we talked about that. But there's another one I don't think we've talked about much at all, if any, is really ensuring that second one that he listed in there, which is ensure understanding mm. of intent. And what that means, that's a fancy way of saying that I make sure Rachel understands how the job that she does relates mm-hmm. to overall organizational performance.
Yeah.
And a little less grand than that, how it relates to other departments' performance, other sections' performance. Mm-hmm. other people on her team's performance, yeah. right? It sounds like something like maybe, I think it's going to be taken two ways. Like, duh, all right? Or on the other side of the aisle, they could be like,
why do they need to know
that? Why do they need to know that? Who has time for that? Or I did tell them once. Yeah. Okay, we're not telling them the day they in process when they're nervous as hell and they're trying to make a good impression
and
on you.
They're learning a million things about everything.
And then, you know, they're thinking, where do I go to get my lunch?
Where did I park my car?
Exactly. In my interview with Kevin Gazzara, Dr. Kevin Gazzara, we got into this a little bit. And his thing was, the data shows really good leaders are very good at making sure their employees understand the why.
Yeah.
Why do I do this? And your boy Simon Sinek talks about it, right? Uh-huh. That's an inside joke, folks, we will talk about. And it is true. Simon Sinek didn't I've been hearing start with why for decades, right? He just was smart and monetized it. But I really agree with that. And it's something I know I do, but it's, again, you hear me preach about a lot of things, but now the great thing about doing this podcast as opposed to when I was teaching college through the years is because basically you got to stay on a certain curriculum and there's certain things you got to teach. What I've really found is I'm finding things that I've done in the past that really contributed to what I did well, or sometimes didn't contribute to me doing well, that I go, aha, okay. I sort of have understand that unconsciously, intuitively. I've just never really verbalized it or understood it at the conscious level. And this is one of them, that I know something that by and large I did pretty well was making sure people understand how what they did related to everybody else. Because if you don't do that, here's the thing. If you don't do that, people need context. Mm-hmm. People need to understand how what they do relates to everything else, not only why it matters, but it also gets them out of that little silo that they live in. And go ahead.
It contributes to their sense of purpose. And it continues to their,
for sure.
It contributes to their sense of, why does my job matter beyond? And, you know, like we've talked about, we both work we both work majority of our careers in healthcare centers, healthcare environments. And so, like, the easy answer there is it's a patient, which obviously does matter a lot. And for a lot of people, that's enough. But it's also, so
but
other
that can
people,
seem very can, removed for certain can, jobs,
exactly,
like mine as an administrator.
Exactly.
Right?
Or for, like, you know, but I think the, you know, it's not just about the patient.
And it's not also specific enough for a lot of jobs. I think that's what you're getting at.
Yes.
That's an easy way out. If I go, well, you're here to input this data for the patients. Yeah. Like, how the hell is that?
Sometimes it turns into, it's like the four-year-old being like, I want to help people when I grow up. Yeah, right. And which, again, nothing to frown. That's good for the people who have it.
It turns me off in interviews when I used to sit in here. I just want to be here to help the patient.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and
okay.
It's like, what is that? That's not very, clearly haven't worked in a healthcare setting before because that. While under way deep down, that does matter. Sometimes that can be crowded out by the day-to-day stuff.
Yes, yes.
Versus the most people, and this is where we find, and like I think we've talked about this before, and fields where it's not the why we're here is so obvious. It's about the people you're working with.
Yeah.
It's about how do I help us and my team and the organization create the product or provide the service that we're trying to provide. And that is so much about that is just understanding what other people do and how they interact with me and how me doing a good job helps them.
Yeah. What would happen if I didn't do my job? And I think I am so good at this that was very egotistical. I think I've done this well for the most part. And I won't edit that out. I'll let them get a glimpse into my narcissism. But because I have been in the more ancillary type roles for basically my whole career. You know, I have never been.
You can't rely on, it's the patient.
It's the patient. And, you know, I'm going in there to remove a kidney. I don't do that. Yeah. I deal with paperwork. I deal with processes. Mm-hmm. And that, because of what I do and because I'm the type of person that needs a reason to do what he does, right? Yeah. I need a reason to do almost anything. I'm very go-oriented, for better or worse. I think early on, I had to understand, why is it I do this? What is going to happen if I don't do this? Mm-hmm. What happens if I do this really, really well? What happens if I do this with mediocre? Because I'm constantly, that's another thing about me, and I think it's another reason I have done it naturally, is because I really put weight on what I do.
Yeah.
And I really pick and choose what I'm going to kill myself on and what I know just needs to be good enough. Mm-hmm. And I know that can sound awful to a lot of people, but it, to me, in
everybody
the real,
works that way, even if they're not consciously working that way.
Exactly.
If they're trying to do everything 100%, then nothing's getting done 100%.
Exactly. And I've always tried to make a conscious effort to know what I really need to really, really put all my efforts in. And the higher up I've gotten, that's become even more important because you're constantly getting hit with different priorities and everybody's telling you theirs is the most important.
Of course.
Right? So you have to learn to objectively to weigh them and not mean that mean you're blowing other people off, but know where you need to put your most efforts in at that time sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just at that time and then you can reshift them.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a whole long way of saying that, but I do think it is something. Just look at yourself to see if you are good at really on a constant, regular basis in your regular meetings with your employees. Mm-hmm. Are you really making sure they understand the importance of what they do? And not just you saying, what you do is important. Mm-hmm. They really understand it in a very specific, almost diagram way, like almost like it's on a process map in their head, how what they do relates to everybody.
Because they can internalize it when you explain to them how it helps other people.
Sort of like the story kind of thing.
Exactly.
You're painting a story of how
they're helpful. Yeah. And
check out that episode too,
folks. But if you just say, you're doing a great job and your work is important, they can't internalize that. They're like, okay, whatever. That's what they're supposed to tell me. But if you say, hey, this is how your section or team impacts the entire organization or maybe just a couple other departments, sometimes for people, and like we kind of referenced before, like for some people, I'm here to help the patient is enough. And they don't need anything more than that. But for other people, it's not going to be enough for forever or through the hard times. So helping them get better context and better why can be really valuable to help them just continue to have an enjoyable time at work and put forth their best efforts.
Yeah. And as you said before, if you do that and you do it effectively and people really internalize that, it does a lot of the work for you with that other stuff, right? It does a lot of that stuff that if they really understand and know the importance of it, then that's just less things you got to worry about because it's going to drive them to do things that otherwise maybe they wouldn't or to put more focus on things that otherwise they wouldn't, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, that's all I got for this one. Rachel, you have anything else?
No, that's all I got.
All right. So once again, folks, before we sign off, I want to say we covered a little bit here. And as you saw, there's some still good stuff, but we've got some other really good stuff in our interview with Julian Chapman in a couple of days. And the book was The Managerial Leadership Journey. We think overall it's a really, really good book.
No, it's really good.
It has a lot of good stuff in there. And you will see that there's even more when you tune in on Thursday and hear us talk to Julian himself. Also, a very nice guy.
Oh, he was great. He was very nice.
He's Canadian, but you know, that's part of it. But I have met some nasty Canadians.
Well, that's unlucky.
Yeah. But no, he's a really nice guy. Yeah, retired Brigadier General. Mm-hmm. I don't think we said
that is before. one of the cool, I mean, you know, we're both either prior military or currently in the military, so that's not unique to us. But he used a lot of military examples in his book. So
he
if
does.
That's something you like, it's kind of different.
He does, but what he's good about is he says it's coming from the military and he sort of explains it if you're not really familiar with the military way of thinking or terminology.
Yeah. So that was fun. I mean, like I said, I think we're both pretty used to that, but I think for somebody who wasn't, that could be a neat, a difference, a way that the book kind of stands out.
No, I agree. I very much agree. Well, folks, that's it. And thank you as always for tuning in and we will see you next time.
Bye everybody.